Yes, hello and welcome to another edition of Footballed, the Wednesday/Thursday edition of the Fox Football Podcast. Delayed for a day this week so that we could get Andy Harper into the studio live with us. This week on the show, we'll look at Warren Joyce taking on Melbourne City. We'll follow on from our chat last week about the Socceroos starting 11. And this week, we'll actually look at how many places we realistically think are up for grabs in the Asian Cup squad. Everyone talking about who might or who might not be in it. We'll look at how many places are actually up for discussion. And in a huge revelation, we'll explain to you that Sam Kerr is very, very good at football, but a very happy football podcast. And welcome to the studio, Andy Harper.
Present.
Great to have you, Harps. No technicalities this week of phones dropping out and FaceTime's going berserk.
Yeah.
It's good to have you.
There was a little bit of feedback about the quality of your line.
Well, I wondered last week, given that we were trying FaceTime, I wondered if it was anything to do with the weathered nature of my face that meant the whole technology system broke down. I am pleased to report that the problem wasn't at my end, however.
Really?
Hmm.
Technology has revealed. The IT department has put up their hand.
How do you figure
that's this? That's just my claim and I'm sticking to it.
Now, before we get into it, I need to point out, Harps, that it has been a massive week for Brenton Speed on the world stage.
Bigger than normal.
Like, we know he is a very, very, very powerful man in world football.
Bigger than Martin Tyler going weak at the knees over our feet.
Yes, this is
even bigger than that, Murray.
This is even bigger. Because something that Speedy has been banging on about... Banging on about year after year after year.
He's a good
year,
banger.
He loves a banger. Has finally had IFAB stand up and take notice. So Speedy, as you know, for a long time has been complaining about goal kicks leaving the penalty box.
Yeah.
And IFAB during the week said that that is no longer going to be an issue. So something that Speedy has been on his high horse about, that the ball shouldn't have to go out of the penalty box when you take a goal kick because it's just a time-wasting exercise, they've finally said, yes, Brenton Speed, we hear you and we're going to change it. You are a very, very powerful man in world football.
Well, what we have known about Brenton Speed is he puts significant pressure just by his mere presence.
Brenton Infantino or Gianni Speed?
He brings enormous pressure to bear in all the significant moments. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking particularly of his top button sometimes, mm-hmm. which does threaten to pop out.
Yep.
And if you can extrapolate that analogy through to how IFAB must have been feeling this week under this viral barrage started by the great Brenton Speed about the game-changing impact, Murray. The game-changing impact of a ball not having to leave the 18-yard box for a penalty area. I mean, the next thing Speedy will be turning his head to is the tariff war between China and America. I mean, can this man do any more?
I want to just see him on a world tour of solving problems around the world. He starts with IFAB and then he just moves around the world.
Yeah.
Speedy, what do you have to say?
We have a legend in our midst.
Power?
It's been emotional. Ben Wilson alerted me to it via Twitter because he saw it and he knew I'd been banging on about that rule. But it's, you know, if you're going to play out from the back, which is a want of a lot of teams these days, you've got a fallback mechanism that if you're under the pump all of a sudden as the ball's rolling to you, step into the box and have another go. It's the most ridiculous basketball rule.
I must admit, I disagree with Speedy on a lot. But this is something that I do actually agree with him because I was waiting for the day when a team's got 3 minutes to go and they're holding on to a lead and they could have done it six times in a row and wasted 2 minutes.
Ten times
in a row. Probably sportsmanship would have come into it at some sort of stage, but I actually agree wholeheartedly
with Speedy on this. I think the real learning in this is that if you've got a reasonable case, and let's face it, we all think we've got a reasonable case every time we open our mouth, but you know, common sense can find the common ground between what we say and whatnot. But we should fall in behind this guy. Mate, Speedy should
be... There's some space in behind him.
to an area. Speedy should be the not insignificantly sized rule Trojan horse.
Yes. So what's next? That is...
Here's my first one, yeah. Right? And Speedy, this is bang up your alley. And we've not talked about this before, so I'm going to be interested in your response. Why on earth are chest backs and head backs to a goalkeeper legitimately picked up by said goalkeeper? If we want the game to flow on, why don't we make any intentional contribution back to the goalkeeper?
The Zelic rule.
Is that the Zelic rule?
Well, he just wants no pass backs to the keeper.
Well, I'm too traditional. I'm traditional slash progressive. The traditional view would say goalkeepers are there to use their hands and spoil everyone's fun.
Yep.
The progressives say goalkeepers are the 11th field player.
Yep.
Using their feet, Matt Ryan being the classic modern example in an Australian sense. So I wouldn't agree with Ned on that, but wouldn't it liven things up if defenders couldn't just cushion the ball back to their goalkeeper by their chest or head it back? Any intentional play back to your goalkeeeper,
well,
the keeper should have to play with their feet. Speedy, take
it
up for us.
If you want this changed, the man here
Speedy.
To do it.
Well, the first thing is, does he agree?
One. He might have another one.
Does he? We have to defer to this greatness. Do you agree with that,
Bow,
Speedy?
Genuflect to the speed.
You alert IFAB to it in the call. They've obviously got media monitors because I was throwing it up and referencing IFAB. When I wasn't getting much love, I finally threw the IFAB reference in there, and lo and behold,
do they have a
few months down the track, you get some pay dirt.
Do IFAB have a hashtag, or are the home nations who make up IFAB and the people...
Hashtag blah blah.
Are they still working on steam-driven computers?
Yeah. Imagine IFAB sitting there going, "This Brenton speed down in Australia."
No, they're English.
Oh, that's true.
Or is that your Irish accent?
Now, just to continue on this theme of a big week for Brenton Speed Hub.
Yes.
Following on last week from our chat about the Socceroos starting 11 and players who should come into the squad, Speedy tossed up Ben Falami or Falami? Falami?
Falami.
Didn't he score the winner for Man United the other day?
Yes, very true. He tossed that up saying, you know, why don't we have a look at this kid, et cetera, et cetera. It created a storm, I would say. It created a social storm, particularly with Melbourne City captain Scott Jamieson, who just would not have a bar of it.
Right.
And there was a bit of a social tete-a-tete between Speedy and Scott Jamieson.
Right.
Now, I think we all understand that Scott Jamieson is probably the angriest man in the A-League, and he came up against the Speed. The Speed stood his ground, but he was obviously still so riled, Jammo, that even on Saturday night, Melbourne City versus Brisbane, he then picked a fight with Eric Boatiak.
Yeah, of all people.
He's a very angry man, Scott.
What about the same issue? Well, he just had to take it out on someone.
I just think he had to take it out on someone.
Do we need to coin, if there's a Twitter spat, right, do we need to actually invent a word for what a Twitter spat is?
Mm.
So we should set ourselves. I don't have an answer.
Don't take the first word of Twitter and the last two words of spat.
Yes, well, I'm sure we can find something. So from this point on, and I haven't got the word, but we'll... fill the blank here, blah, blah, hashtag, hashtag, blah, blah. Speedy and Jambo were in a...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where you're coming up with.
Too many syllables in Twitter.
I just think it'd be...
Suggest that Jambo, who is an angry man, needs to find some sort of relaxing pastime just to calm the nerves?
Wasn't that the point of sport? Isn't that why he plays soccer?
What's the Japanese one when you trim the roots?
Bonsai.
Bonsai. Mm. What about Jambo doing a little bit of bonsai? And the other thing I was thinking about Jambo is that, you know, when you turn up at the ground with the headsets on,
yes,
and you probably got some pump up music that you're playing just to fire you up as you turn up to the ground.
I think there's a study in that most players have got nothing in the headphones.
Well, what I'm suggesting is that he maybe needs some relaxing music, some, like, you know, Wales or something like that.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, or Enya. Have you got any Enya, Phil? Can you play some Enya just in underneath?
Yeah,
just
sure.
just to relax the pod.
Beautiful.
See, they just have that. Maybe when he turns up to a ground.
If people are that...
It's the Melbourne Derby. Okay, I don't want to get angry.
It reminds me of a dear friend of ours who in the preparation for childbirth, had, right, I want to do it all naturally. I'd like to have incense burning and, you know, light this and light that and some candles and some whale music, right? Mate, when the guns start firing, get rid of the smoke! Turn off that music! I'm sure many people listening can appreciate. Yeah. So if Jambo is that worked up, Enya ain't going to do anything for him.
What did you used to have playing on the headphones when you walked into the ground? Oh, you probably didn't have it.
No, we didn't.
We had halves with a gramophone. No, as he's walking in.
That's right. We had disc-to-disc, you know, the disc-to-disc tape recorders. Stop, rewind, yeah.
Yeah. All right, we should probably be serious.
Though.
And by the way, Scott Jamieson, don't go changing. We love you. Now, players you enjoyed watching on the weekend, let's start with you, Brenton Speed.
I'll go to the Scott Jamieson game. Against the Brisbane Roar, and Alex Lopez is just a fabulous player. What a recruit that John Aloisi has come up with there. When other players are struggling just to pass sideways, he finds the pass forward. And the way that he set up Taggart's second goal as well, he played the first ball in and then second time around picked up the scraps. And again, a lot of players would say, oh, I've got the ball, let's recycle it, let's go backwards. He went first time pass forward and tag it. As a result, he's able to bend it in the far corner and score a goal. Because of Lopez and his forward thinking, Taggart is able to score goals, and that's great for the game.
He's a good player.
In one of the great A-League axioms that's developed over the years, Melbourne Victory have never been the same since Fred left.
Mm.
Is Alex Lopez
the new Corona?
The new Corona.
The new Corona.
No.
But that was the theory.
That's not supposed to be silly. That's a fair question.
That was your theory. Didn't you bring it up in previous podcasts that they think Corona to McLaren is going to be replicated by Lopez to Taggart? And we're seeing that last weekend.
Yep. Magnificent player. I will go next, Harps, before we get to yours. I didn't see this guy play live, but I certainly watched the replay of Aaron Moy for Huddersfield versus Wolves on the weekend. Scored two goals. The second, a delight. Delightful free kick. Did you see the second, Speedy? I was almost going to ring you on this free kick. They set up. Did you see the setup of the wall from Wolves? They had like a, if you like, in cricket parlance, a third slip. So a guy sort of standing away from the wall.
Yeah.
And Aaron's just gone, thanks very much, and put the ball in between the two of them around the wall and into the post to score. It was quite extraordinary. I don't know what that guy was supposed to be doing on the end of the wall. But anyway, Aaron Moy, who's now playing further up the field, as we've discussed on this podcast before, for Huddersfield, and we'd like to see him doing the same for the Socceroos, was absolutely outstanding. Even Sky Sports at the moment now, Harp, saying he's probably he was measured as the most informed player in the Premier League at the moment, ahead of like Leroy Sané, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So
that's not an opinion.
This is statistically measured.
6 weeks of crunching algorithms and stats, and Aaron Moy comes out on top. Yeah, it's great. It's great. I listened to that game driving to Canberra early. So I left. I left Sydney at 4 o'clock to get to Canberra for Sparrow's Fart on Monday, and happened upon the call, which came through on on news radio, ABC. Yep. We get. And no A-League on the radio at that time, obviously. But you get the same game covered twice. The Macquarie Sports Network covers the game and news radio. And the commentary in describing, firstly, Moy's goals, but just generally his performance, we lose sight of how good he is.
Yeah.
We really do lose sight of how good he is and how much of an Australian product he is. This is going to feed into broader discussions throughout the weeks. But and I can only repeat, this is not revising history. And I'm sure you guys haven't changed your view either. Aaron Moy is a big club proposition. There's no question in my mind.
Absolutely.
So what's it going to take for a big club, and a big club had him and loaned him out before selling him in Manchester City, what's it actually going to take for one of these clubs that challenges for Premier League and possibly even Champions League to actually say, you know what, this bloke is actually good enough?
Well, what it's going to take is probably Huddersfield to get relegated.
Right.
Because then they'll be looking to probably get rid of a few players, and if they can cash in on Aaron Moy to a bigger club, then probably all end up happening. Should point out why you were in Canberra this week too, Harps.
Yes, I was doing my A-licence refresher. It was great. There was a whole bunch, 30-odd candidates for the A-licence, former A-League players and internationals and World Cup scorers amongst them, including the great Shane Hare-Schmeltz.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Howard Fondyke, Ruben Zadkovic, Josh Rose, Andrew Clark, who's with the Socceroos staff, is getting his football-specific accreditation, and a whole cast of people from around the country, young guys out of Tasmania, people at the other end of their coaching career but still pushing on. Very, very stimulating environment and very well run by FFA. You know, the coaching instruction had been really good, was really good. And there's equally a realisation from everyone there, Muzz, that we've got to start tweaking a few things. And the big discussion is about Aaron Moy's name wasn't invoked in this discussion, but our system, by hook or crook, is producing really competitive teams, uber competitive teams. They pump out all these stats about the World Cup, last World Cup, etc. And whatever people think about the France team that actually won it, on average, in the three games Australia played against France's average, Australia made the same number of entries into the penalty area as France.
Mm.
France's stats, attacking stats, if people want to dig them up and look at them, are pretty bland.
Mm.
My point was, how can you be a coach of a team with that talent and dish up that type of football? Anyway, he won the comp. Point I'm making is, this is rammed home about the type of players that our system still actually isn't being able to craft. And it gets into this discussion, which I'm sure we'll go on from here, The factory that is being created around the world, the coaching factory, is effective to a point. But what we're losing from years gone past, not just in Australia but around the world, is the handcrafted player, you know, the beautiful, expressive player. And we've got to find that balance, certainly in Australia. The factory's not going too badly, but we've got to be able to flick the switch to the handcraft, let the specialists mould someone of beauty that's going to excite the fans and indeed score the goals.
So you got your A licence a long time ago. Now you do a refresher. Is there some time in the future where Andy Harper could coach an A League team?
Well, that depends on the influence of B Speed.
And you know, and why stop at the A League given Speed's
world domination? Yeah, I mean, if Speedy starts banging that drum, you never know where I could end up.
That's right.
Maybe he just wants me out of the commentary box.
True. Now, we haven't gone through your player to watch.
Yes.
But it was one from
Neil Kilkenny. Yeah. Always been a fantastic player. I really liked Neil Kilkenny in the national team when he was there with Holger Osick. I thought he gave exactly what we're saying now then. And he doesn't change as a player. He obviously has his peaks and troughs and variations in form, to which point I would suggest, after the number of rounds we've had so far, not a team of the week, but you're picking an A-League 11 based on the opening to the season, he'd be the first midfielder you pick. That's my view. I think he's been outstanding.
Yep. Which leads us beautifully into a discussion about his old club. So Neil Kilkenny was let go by Melbourne City to go to Perth Glory, just one of a number of players who had a fallout with the coach, Warren Joyce. The latest in that list was Bruno Fornaroli on the weekend. There's contrasting stories as to why he was left out. The line we heard from Warren Joyce a number of times was he was simply picking the best team to win that match. The flip side of that is he was obviously in the best team to win the match the fortnight before when he scored against Wellington Phoenix on the Friday night. There's also stories that Bruno Fornaroli wasn't happy that he couldn't get a transfer to Sydney in the off-season, and then he's got the hump that he was told he was going to be on the bench and he didn't want to travel if he was going to be on the bench. And if that's the case, then you firmly back the coach in that situation. But what's your take on it, Speedy?
Well, also the time that they played against Brisbane in the FFA Cup in pre-season, we were there. Who scored the goal in the 120th minute or something like that? So his fitness levels were reasonable then against Brisbane in pre-season. So there was some talk about fitness being a concern as well for Fornaroli. So, boy, it's gone downhill since pre-season when he's running out the full 2 hours of game time. It's just not a good look for the club. And this seems to be happening a lot at that club. Why does it happen at Melbourne City, which should be the glamour club, should be, making headlines for all the right reasons, and seemingly every month it has these kinds of headlines. When is it going to stop?
This is a perplexing question because this sort of stuff happens at other clubs from time to time. You know, players fall out, but there has been a rush of them at Melbourne City. Certainly even this season, Luke Bratton bombed out of the squad. You know, Caceres hasn't been cited. Anthony's a different discussion altogether.
Do you want an 11 of players that have seemingly fallen out with Warren Joyce over the course of his tenure?
Sure.
Neil Kilkenny, we mentioned. Tim Cahill, obviously. Bruno Fornaroli, Bratton, Caceres, Ivan Franjic, Fernando Brandan, Michael Jakobsen, Ross McCormack, Ruan Tonjic, Marcelo Karuska.
You can make a decent team.
That's a fairly good side.
Fitzgerald,
Nick Fitzgerald, Bruce Kamau, obviously. We don't know whether they fell out, but they've obviously left.
Well, I mean, there's a clear distinction that needs to be made because the
club should always support the coach too in this situation because player power is not what necessary.
Totally, and then they will. You know, they will be supporting Warren Joyce.
So long as he's winning.
But, you know, what's emerging now, it's not a matter of fitness or skin folds. There's power plays going on. There's about the coach needing, in his eyes, this is my interpretation now, to reassert his authority. And if there is anything in the Bruno to Sydney story and that he's been unsettled since, who's going to prescribe to Warren Joyce how he handles that? I'm not, but I think I'm pretty comfortable that it's not an issue about skin folds. This is an issue about asserting coach authority, and fair enough. The fact that this theme seems to have been stretched out to other players is for the club to decide. But it's not as though you've got another candidate as a goal scorer in your ranks like Bruno Fornaroli in matches you've got to win. So there's very obviously something that's got to be sorted out there. And so now we wait for January to see if there's actually going to be any movement materially on this issue or Bruno's going to pull his head in and do what's expected of him. Not to suggest that he's been, missing in action or wandering, but I'm prepared to make an opinion opinionated assessment that things aren't happy back there and they've got to sort it.
And on the Sydney FC front, I mean, we've got intra-club loans available.
This is the thing.
Could they loan him? They've got to wait till January to do that now, or could they just do that?
No, I think you've got to still... Well, that's a good point. My assumption, and be happy for the feedback, is you've got to do this inside transfer windows.
Yeah.
Unless someone's off contract.
Yeah, and they'd have to be in the whole contract.
Is Warren Joyce under pressure because of it?
You know, we had this when we had...
take us into the dressing room, Arps. You've been there, Speedy and myself haven't.
Yeah.
There's obviously...
Not the Melbourne City one.
In general. You would have been in teams where players, well, not so much have ganged up on the coach, but, you know, have clearly not got on with the coach and wanted him to move on.
Mm.
What happens?
I have been in some... I have been in some very functional dressing rooms and some pretty dysfunctional ones. Even in the dysfunctional one, though, I couldn't hand on heart say... Players mounted a conspiracy.
Mm.
Individual players had significant problems with a coach.
Mm.
And I, at one point, was one of them with one of the coaches I had, and it was just an insoluble situation. Different time then. There wasn't nearly the focus, nor the money invested in the games, and nor the pay packets at stake at the other end of it. So, and certainly when you're talking about someone like Bruno Fornaroli, who's created his own story in the A-League, he is a bona fide... big name and a match winner and a potential championship winner. That requires a special, but so was Tim Cahill. So we did the A-League roundtable at the start of the season and the question was thrown out to us, you know, who's the coach under most pressure? And someone suggested Warren Joyce. And I think that was because of the size of the City Football Group as it is and their investment in Melbourne City. So therefore he's under pressure. And I leapt in and said, I reckon he's the safest coach in the league because of the decision made to get him and the people behind that decision and in a very considered sense, this is what we want Warren Joyce to do. And I think, do we not agree that the assumption is they're here really to develop young talent to feed through the City Football Group network? That seems to me to be, at this point, their number one objective. And whilst he keeps doing that, with Nathaniel Atkinson at the time being and Lockie Wales, who's looking even better for more football, I would suggest that the ownership and the management there will remain behind the coach. That's my view.
So Warren Joyce is the only coach in world football who can do that. I mean, why couldn't another coach come in and bring that same sort of development of young players and also make them into a world-beating or an A-League-beating football team?
Yeah, well, they might think he's not doing the job well enough, but they'd... You know, the people who run the City Football Group, the football operation, not just the Melbourne version of it, but the global side of it, they made a very considered decision about Warren Joyce. They knew him well. They'd watched his work. And so it's going to take... We don't know what his measurements are, right? But from that point, even without knowing those, it's going to take a monumental fall for them to decide that first decision was wrong and for him to give them that ammunition. I don't see it just yet. You know, they might be prepared for some ructions with senior players so long as the team's basically moving in a direction but the kids are coming through.
I sat on my couch for 10 hours on Sunday. The couch has now got a fairly large dent in it and watched four games of football and shootout. Thoroughly enjoyed all of them. But Jubilee Stadium on Sunday looked absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
On the television, Harps, you were there in person. Mm. How was it?
Great. And two things. The first thing about it as a venue, they don't play any cricket or anything there now, do they?
No.
So, excuse me, please. I would wonder why, having invested as they have now, they don't invest in the bank area, the grass bank area, and actually bring it right onto the sideline. I'm not sure it would take a pile of money to actually turn that into a pure football venue that the St. George Illawarra Dragons might want to use more and that certainly Sydney FC. That's the first thing in general. Secondly, can I pay massive tribute to Sydney? I thought they dressed this place up
brilliant.
It looked like their home ground.
Yeah.
Walking into the place, they really captured the whole thing about making people feel like they were at home, whatever it was hanging around, the signage, the colours. I thought they did a sensational job and well done to them.
Yeah, there must be athletics carnivals or something maybe throughout the year for local schools. Otherwise, it's a no-brainer to make it more rectangular because rugby league's the other game that's played there.
Mm. Some great scenes after that game that were only really captured on social media, which was the number of Japanese fans lining up waiting for Keisuke Honda to leave the ground, searching for an autograph. He was fantastic on Sunday. He was great to watch, and he justified why he's got this marquee tag and why about $3 million was spent to bring him out here.
Yep, and why Asian marquee players are worth pursuing if you can integrate them with the specific Asian community they represent in a general sense, in a more specific sense. So, fantastic. And one of the funnier parts of the day, Mars, and there was a queue of Japanese fans trying to get to him, it was one of those great Billy Birmingham, Richie Beno lines about the autograph. There's a queue and they invited Archie over. Archie. And when Archie sort of swaggered over to give him his autograph and they said, gave him a book, say, can you go and get Keisuke's autograph? Archie, to his eternal credit, dutifully did, but he waddled off into the dressing room with a couple of books and got them signed by Keisuke. He has been enormous. I agree with you, Muzz.
Two stories coming out of that match. Does Sydney have cause for concern that they seem to lack a bit of creativity in their final third, and also that Victory now, after a slow start, seem to be finding their feet? And
not from what I watched. I think it was a poor day at the office from Sydney in the final third viewpoint.
Hmm.
I reckon it's way too early if the jury's deciding that Lafondra's not the man for them. I mean, he started scoring goals on a weekly basis. Indeed, he scored the penalty at the second attempt. So, I'm still a fan. The problem wasn't Lafondra or a lack of creativity, because we're talking about an attacking midfield that's got Milos Ninkovic, for Pete's sake.
And De Jong waiting in the wings.
Well, you know,
when he gets
the jury's definitely out on him, I'm sorry to say, still, just durability-wise. But the problem for Sydney was appalling conversion into the attacking zone from great situations, or areas, quote-unquote. Just appalling. From international players, good players, the rest of whose game was good, solid, great completed passes, excellent movement. Get to the money ball, horrible, horrible. And I'm not going to hang out Lafondra for that.
No.
And Steve Corica put it on the record post-game. I mean, he said, we need a striker and we need an attacking player. And they lost Bahaj and they lost De Jong for quite a significant time. So there's two key players who would have been regular starters in that front four that are missing. And as a result, you're bringing Lachlan Lingoy off the bench for a significant part of the game. And then you're bringing Aaron Calver off the bench to play the Matt Simon role.
Yeah.
That shows where their bench has gone
in the mixer.
So depth is an issue. Yeah. But it's cloud and silver lining stuff. De Jong's out, Retre's in. And we are seriously watching the emergence here. He was outstanding again.
He made Boz's team of the week in a losing side.
And he got substituted again. Yeah. And so he hasn't quite yet cracked it in the eyes of his own coach. But having said that, when Bimby's got to make the changes, I understand why he was the sacrifice given what was available. But, you know, De Jong's out, Retre's in. That's great for Aussie football. I reckon he's a fabulous player.
And a point we made on this podcast a few weeks ago, Melbourne Victory, you've gone back to Carl Valeri, and he was fantastic on Sunday. And even Lee Broxham when he came on.
Yeah.
You know what you're going to get.
Yeah. You know, when it was Player of the Week discussion time, I had Carl slated as one I wanted to talk about, except that you were banging his drum a couple of weeks ago. So I thought, for the sake of not because I don't believe Neil Kilkenny's been great, but, you know, I agree. Carl was fantastic. Great captain.
The interesting story in the Sydney Morning Herald today from Vince Regari, Harps, that I know. That I know you wanted to comment on. Looking at next season, assuming we're going to get expansion next season, and we sort of cross our fingers and hope that that will be the case. We'll learn more after a meeting on December the 12th.
You got any percentage feel, assuming?
No, I'm just hopeful. I think I'm the same as most football fans, and certainly the three of us around this desk. We'd just like to see some more teams into the comp.
You'd agree with that? Do you think it's a 50-50 or a 60-40 or an 80-20?
I sort of see that the messages coming from the board seem to suggest that they're all fans of it, probably working through the logistics and whether or not it'll work. I mean, I guess what could happen on December the 12th is that we're going to get a decision saying, yes, there's two new teams, but they're not starting until 2021, if you see what I'm saying, the season after. I just hope that isn't the case and that they've got enough time to get up and running for next year.
Mm.
Anyway, the makeup of that competition. So Vince is opining that we're going to have 12 teams. So how many rounds will we play? Do we continue with everyone playing each other three times and get 33 rounds? Do we just have a simple home and away season, which is 22 rounds, which his suggestion was probably not long enough? Or do we meet somewhere in the middle and follow on from what happens in rugby league and AFL, where you don't have a consistent home and away competition and you basically cherry pick the best games for the purpose of attracting bigger crowds?
Yeah. Well, I think it depends on what we all agree are the what's the target with this. And expansion, having just come out of this group in Canberra, Muzz, I can tell you the appetite for expansion from these 30 guys as A-League coaches, not be A-licensed coaches, not because they necessarily aspire to elite coaching like that, although a significant chunk do. But there's a general acceptance that this has to happen for all the reasons that have been discussed a lot. So on the percentages, Speedy, mate, if it's not 95-5 in favour of expansion at board level, using the analogy that the ball comes across the six-yard box, there's no goalkeeper, it's at a friendly pace and it's a pristine pitch, you're a 95% chance to score that goal. And if you don't, it's calamitous. That's what I'm looking at in the expansion discussion. And how do FFA convert 95 into 5%? If it takes rebudgeting the rest of the game or taking money out of other pots for the sake of seeding this, providing the necessary seed capital to get this up and running for next season, then I think they should make that decision. I really don't think a few dollars here and there, when I say a few dollars, we're talking in the seven figures, but reallocating your budget to make sure this imperative goes through, I think they should most certainly do it to convert the 95% chance. Look at it this way. If their first move into the brave new world of a new Congress reflecting the views of the game is we're not expanding, I don't know how they recover politically from that. That's a really bad message. So, I mean, I'm banging on about this. So I think it's really important.
And the other headline got you as well, the other bid from Sydney offering a bit of compensation to Sydney FC in the form of another seven-figure sum for walking onto their territory.
And they can't understand why Sydney FC, and good on them, didn't respond to the offer of a structural adjustment package, a.k.a. a sweetener. Maybe it wasn't big enough. Who knows? Everyone's got their price, but good on Sydney FC. And, you know, I can't for the life of me see how it stacks up necessarily. But to the issue you raised, Muzz, and we should chew on this one, what does the league look like? How many rounds? And if we have to go to a – based on the Ruggs argument, you know, if you go to a 12 teams, that means home and away, 22 rounds. No one would prosecute the case that it's in the interest of the A-League year on year to have a 22-game season. However, I reckon – no, I don't reckon. I believe strongly you could roll out one season at 22 games in the expectation that the year after that there's another two teams coming in making it a 14-team league. Then you got your 26 rounds.
And you could make a 5 to 6 week final series as well.
There are plenty of ways to cut the cloth. Plenty of ways to cut the cloth. And you know, it's flat earth mentality that says 22 rounds is a hopeless consideration. It is long term, not for the sake of a transition period. And I think we all want a home and away league, don't we?
And maybe better than, better than 33 when some people play, you know, 2 out of 3 at home against the respective opponent.
We don't, going forward into this brave new world, it's not our first choice to have a 3-round comp, is it? Do we prefer a home and away scenario?
So the ideal scenario eventually is 14 teams, plays each other twice and you get 26 rounds, which is one round less than now, but obviously a lot more football because there's 7 games each round times 26, which equals whatever that is, 182. At the moment, we're playing about 140 games a season.
Is there anything worth considering about the hybrid view, copying the NRL and AFL about certain teams playing each other 3 times? In our sense, that would be the derbies and everyone else twice, which lopsides the draw ridiculously in my view. But do we want that for the A-League?
No, I don't think so.
Not ideally. But as you said, if it's a in-between scenario for one season...
Okay, here's your choice. Yep. Here's your in-between. 27 rounds of sometimes you play 3, sometimes you play 2, or 22 rounds. Clear, home and away, get it done for the season.
Well, I'd take 22.
Well, the other
way you get to 27 or somewhere in that vicinity is you separate the teams after two home and away rounds, and you have that like they do in various leagues in Korea. I think they do it as well. They halve the comp,
yep.
And top five play, and you know what the top teams that are going to be playing finals or what have you, and they play each other once more.
Interesting.
So you, you halve the comp.
The rug also put in what this does to the FFA Cup draw balance, yep. Which was an interesting consideration. And then the suggestion was only the top 10 A-League teams qualify for the Cup.
Well, the point here is, right, once we get 12 teams into the A-League and there's a 32...
Yeah, that's right.
..round of 32, what states deserve to lose a spot for the two A-League clubs come in? But then you can't... Is it fair on two A-League clubs that they miss out on the round of 32?
If your measure is how you went the season before...
Yeah, well, I think that's
fantastic.
Yeah. They never because play
the
a cup
the
game.
FFA are looking at that. The FFA are looking...
If you finish 11th...
And 12th, you don't get into the FFA Cup.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I think that's ridiculous.
Why?
That two top-flight clubs don't even get one game in the cup.
Mm. Can you see any advantage to it, Speedy? Well, before you take it to IFAB?
Well, they should be playing somewhere in the 64. Like, you find another spot there. You know, they have to enter in that ground, you know.
That's going to be a bit of a gimme, you'd reckon, in the round of 64 for an A-League team against potentially a... No, I reckon, you know what, I like it as an idea. It is a non-relegation punishment for teams who flounder. At the moment, if you come and stay motherless in the A-League, what's the imperative, really? Which is why everyone's banging on about promotion relegation. But immediately there's a sanction. Mate, you're off the dance floor this time next year.
The other discussion there too, Harps, is on December the 12th, if they say, right, there's two new teams and they're starting next season.
Mm.
So they're getting ready for an October start to the A-League.
Mm.
Should they be getting ready for a July start to the FFA Cup? No. Or do you just say, don't worry about the FFA Cup next year, just sort yourself out by October?
Probably say that.
Yeah.
We'll go with
the 12 teams into the FFA whatever for the following season.
I'd probably say that. And on a tangent, this is not a Phoenix bash, although I know people are going to think it is. Why Wellington in the Knockout Cup of Australia?
Mm.
And I asked that question because Wellington are not part of the FFA Congress.
Mm.
They had no vote in this thing. So are they a Kiwi club playing in an Australian competition or an Australian team playing out of Wellington? And I can't work out which it is because they're allowed to play in our knockout comp, but they're not allowed to vote. If you're not allowed to vote, you're not allowed to play in the FFA Cup.
W League, Speedy, you were in Perth to watch the Glory, or not to watch, you called it, the Glory and the Central
Coast
Mariners.
It does help if he watches it at the same time.
Well, that's true. That's true. I reckon Speedy could probably commentate without actually watching the game too. It'd be very entertaining. But you did hang around afterwards to watch the W League, of course, for the Perth Glory and Melbourne City, which was a grand final in the W League a couple of seasons ago. But there's a bit of golf in class at the moment. It's probably because of one player. And tell us now why this unknown gem called Sam Kerr that we've never heard
of. Where's she come from?
Yeah, where has she come from? She could be anything, Sam Kerr.
Well, Peter Fitzsimons thinks Australia's looking for a recognised sports hero.
Yep.
Sam Kerr is doing that for sure. And she's forming a wonderful partnership, and they must watch TV, aren't they, every time they go around Perth Glory.
As is the W League.
But that goal that she scores when she runs from halfway, takes on players, and then says, you know, I'll just have a pop from the edge of the area, at full stretch, right foot shot across the keeper, who happens to be Lydia Williams, happens to be the Matildas' best ever goalkeeper, and it just flies past Williams into the side netting for a goal from Sam Kerr. Absolutely fabulous. And then she's got Hill alongside her up front, and Perth just say, like a lot of the great teams on the world stage in the men's game, they just say, you can have all the possession you like taking us on, but as soon as we get the ball, we're pinging it forward and look out.
Mm. Can you just annoy Scott Jamieson right now by suggesting that Sam Kerr should be in the Asian Cup squad? Just watch him throw his toys out of the cot.
What is it about the West at the moment? You know, the cricket team's flying. They've got the Wildcats. They win the Aussie rules. If they had an NRL team, evidently they'd win that as well. Perth Glory top of the A-League. Sam Kerr inspiring the W-League team. Perth could maybe make it a double. You know, is there a big advantage having the Nullarbor separating you from the rest of Australia?
Yeah, it's an advantage the Glory haven't tapped into in the A-League, but now they will under Popper, I think. And I lived in Perth for a year, and it's a great sport.
Oh, that's what did it then?
Yeah.
He's taking claim.
He's taking credit for that.
But it's I played sport all year round. It was brilliant. Basketball at Willerton and Aussie Rules for Bull Creek Leeming, who produced the Brownlow medalist around my time as well. Simon Black played for that club. But you can play sport all year round. It's generally you wake up in the morning and it's blue skies every day. Mm. And I think it breeds a great sporting culture, that city.
Mm. Socceroos squad last week we looked at...
Before we do that,
yep.
Can we just... on the fly, acknowledge the turnaround at Melbourne Victory in the
Melbourne Victory W League team, yep.
Very evidently, I've got no stats to back this up, but Melbourne Victory have decided this year that they're going to do the W League properly. The recruitment says that, and now they're playing so well, it's a great fill-up for the competition. That's all I have to say.
And Emily Gilnick, one of the key...
And Natasha Dowie, we should point out. Last week, the Socceroos squad, we looked at our starting 11s, and Garby and Simon and Robbie Cornthwaite added their 2 cents worth on Monday. I just thought this week, we're all talking about players that are in have potential of being picked by Arnie in his Asian Cup squad in the middle of December. How many spots are we looking at? So let's go through quickly players and say, are they a lock to go on the plane to Abu Dhabi, and in which case, how many spots have we actually got that Arnie is, you know, mulling over the next couple of weeks, and A-League players are playing for over the next couple of weeks? So I'll quickly say the three goalkeepers, Matt Ryan, Danny Vukovic, and Mitch Langerak, you'd have to think can pack their bags already. You can't possibly see that they would make any changes there. It seems that Ryan's number one, Vukovic number two, and Mitch Langerak's the number three. I can't possibly see that would change.
Langerak plays in the J League and they're out of commission in January, so that's a no-brainer, I suppose, for a third wheel. But I would say Paul Izzo could be putting a little bit of pressure on after what he did with Australian youth teams. Brad Jones has been the other keeper in the mix, but I'd say, it does appear a no-brainer, those three.
So that's three spots. So they're all a lock. Righto, defenders. I'm just going to quickly go through the defenders and you tell me whether they've got their plane tickets already handed to them. Trent Sainsbury.
Yep.
Lock. Milos Deganek.
Yep.
Mark Milligan.
Yep.
Josh Risden.
Yep.
Ryan Grant. Definitely going?
Not certainly.
Harps?
No, not certainly.
Casting votes?
This is his first time back in the view, so yeah.
Who can knock him out? Deng only?
Well,
I'll go through the probables in a sec. Okay. So we'll say Grant's not necessarily a lock, as is Baich.
Yes.
Alex Gersbach, yeah, is he a lock?
No.
Yes. Remembering that Arnie is a big fan of him, had him in Sydney, it would surprise me if he wasn't a lock.
Yeah, I wouldn't have him as a lock.
So, okay, you'd do or what do you think Arnie's going to do?
Yeah,
how are we framing this question?
What we think Arnie's going to do.
Right.
Well, it's got nothing to do with what we're going to pick. It's what he's going to do.
But sometimes you just shoot the breeze on this stuff.
And I'll throw one wild card who's coming into the fray again from that Brisbane game against Melbourne City. Scott Jamieson at the left back. No. No, it's the other bloke. Connor O'Toole. He is the best passing left back eligible for Australia. Ahead of Baich, ahead of Gersbach. You watch the way he passes the ball forward, picks out the options. The way he defends is better than Gersbach, I reckon.
Yep.
O'Toole on the rise.
Lock him for 2023. Mm. We'll lock him for that. So we're saying...
I'm saying Gersbach.
I'm saying Gersbach's a lock.
But, mate, I'm going to refloat this name, Ben Garuccio. I love Ben as a player, and I would like him considered in this discussion.
Okay, so Sainsbury, Deganek, Milligan, Risden, Baich and Gersbach. That's six defenders.
Mm.
So three goalkeepers, we're up to nine. Midfielders. Aaron Moy, lock. Tom Rogic, lock.
Mm.
Massimo Luongo, lock. Jackson Irvine, lock. So that's four. So that's 13 of the 23 that are definites. Up front, if you consider them forwards, Matt Leckie is a lock, yes.
Yep.
Is Robbie Cruz definitely on the plane? I would say yes, he's definitely on the plane.
Too? I'm not sure why.
It's not so much why is...
What do you think? Is he going to be there
or not? Is he going to be there
or not? Whether you'd pick
him. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure a coach, if they're watching Robbie Cruz play, and he's playing Bundesliga 2, which is not a great competition, should be locking in Robbie Cruz with what he's giving Australia at the moment. I just don't see why.
Mm. Okay. Martin Boyle is a lock now, correct?
You'd imagine.
Yep.
And Awa Mabile is a lock, correct?
Yep.
So if we're disagreeing on Cruz, and let's be honest, he's going, wouldn't you say? I can't imagine that they're not going to pick him.
Well, I just don't see what he's bringing to the table.
I see what you're saying, but I'm just saying that he will still get picked.
Well, how many spots do you have in if we're going forwards? Don't you normally have four or five?
Yeah, let me finish.
Four/five.
So let's just say Cruz is going. Okay.
So there's only one more spot.
No. So we're now up to 17 of 23. Mm-hmm. So there are six spots left, and by my calculations, that's pretty much two of each. So you've got two defenders, two midfielders, and two strikers, right? So two defenders. We're throwing Ryan Grant into the probables. We've got Thomas Deng, and we've got Matt Yerman. And so we've got Yerman, Deng, and Grant fighting for two spots. Would you agree with that? We could throw in Shane Lowry, who we all like, but let's be realistic. He's probably not there yet. Mm. Would you agree with that, Speedy?
Because Deng is playing as a centre half, but adds to that element, because Yerman should be the inclusion as a centre-half option. Don't you need four centre-halves?
Yep.
So Deng doesn't really qualify as a centre-half at Socceroos level,
Is your backup right-back? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
He obviously does both.
Saying. Maybe that's in his moment. Maybe that knocks one of those other two out.
Okay, so we've got, for the next few weeks, we've got a battle between Yerman, Deng, and Grant for two spots.
Mm. Yeah.
Right. Two midfielders. Amini.
Very good against Lebanon. I think it almost booked his spot.
Is he a lock?
No.
Goodwin, if we're calling him a midfielder. James Jego and probably Dimi Petrados fighting for two spots.
Well, that's why I think Amini is a lock, and the rest can fight amongst themselves.
Mm. I'd take the other way. I would see in a head-to-head between James Jego and Mustafa. Personally, I think that'd float towards James Jego, personally.
Really? Hmm. What do you think Arnie would do?
That's what I'm saying.
His background with Amini, you think Jego's gone past?
I'm with you, Speedy. I think Mustafa Amini and Arnie obviously go a long way back.
Yep.
He sees the ability there.
And the way that he applied the press against Lebanon was eye-catching. I think that secured his spot.
And so are we also agreeing that Goodwin probably still needs to have a couple of good weeks before he's guaranteed a spot in the Asian Cup too?
Yeah, I think he might be. I think he's a 20-80 proposition, not even close to 50-50.
Is he worth considering as a left fullback to give that sort of double up like Thomas Deng does?
I think so. Mm. But
so do you carry him?
But he didn't play any minutes in that.
That's not always that's not always the harbinger, is it?
Yeah. Arnie said that he gets to watch him in the A-League. Mm. He likes what he's doing. Mm. But I still would have liked
that could be just public chat.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen him play in that Lebanon game.
At whose expense?
Off the bench, I mean, at some stage, yeah. But you have the Cahill element there as well, so maybe that cost Goodwin game time.
Finally, two strikers. So we've got Tommy Urich, Jamie McLaren, Andrew Naboot, and I suppose Adam Taggart and maybe even Chris Economides.
Well, I'm taking... I can take three of that lot...
I'm saying you've got two.
Okay. Well, I'm taking Naboot and Economides at the moment, but Taggart's on the rise, and I'm dropping Urich and McLaren.
Mm. Harps?
I would take Economides too. Well, this is what I would do because we've drifted already, haven't we? Mate, I think of the two, I'm expecting him to take Jamie McLaren over Tommy Urich.
Interesting comments from Robbie Cornthwaite on Monday, who said if we think back to what Tommy Urich did during the Wanderers Asian Champions League run to victory, that he was very imposing and that might be the sort of striker that we need during the Asian Cup. Do you take that?
Yeah, I agree. I just don't know that we've seen a lot of evidence since then of Tommy, personally. I don't know what Graham Arnold's view on this is. In any event, I reckon they're going to be making up the numbers because even if we're talking about them as, player 19 to 23 on the squad list, then I think that's the way it's going to shape. So when if Matthew Leckie starts as a centre forward, which I think will probably happen because neither Urich nor McLaren have so far impressed enough.
And scored a good goal, heard a billion last week. Anticipation, poaching.
And I know that's been Graham Arnold's inclination anyway. So which of the two do you keep on the bench? And I think as a pinch hitter, at this stage, probably Jamie McLaren they'll go with, probably.
All right, so over the next few weeks before that squad is announced mid-December, we've basically got about six spots we've ascertained that are up for grabs and some interesting battles and obviously still plenty to play for the likes of Chris Economides and maybe even Adam Taggart. quickly looking at this weekend, Thursday night, Thursday night football is in Newcastle and McDonald Jones, with Newcastle taking on the Brisbane Roar. Speedy will be behind the microphone for that game. Friday's A-League is in Adelaide, with Adelaide taking on Brisbane. On Saturday, the doubleheader starts in the Matt Simon Derby, the Central Coast taking on Sydney FC, followed by what should be a cracker of a game, Melbourne Victory and the Western Sydney Wanderers. W League action, Melbourne City taking on Adelaide. Sunday, Mark Rudin versus Tony Popovich. Wellington taking on Perth in what's been described as the Chivapi Derby, which I quite like.
It's got a ring to it.
Chivapi Derby. We're going with it. Every matchup needs a derby. And the A-League, Melbourne City versus Newcastle. W-League on Sunday sees Canberra take on Sydney FC, who are under the pump a little bit at the moment. And same story in the W-League, Melbourne Victory taking on Western Sydney Wanderers. Before we say goodbye, it is traditional that at about this time on the podcast every single week, Brenton Speed makes an absolute Nadia Comaneci backflip. Do you have any backflips to make?
Murray, you've just dated yourself. I mean, you lambast me week after week for my age.
I've just read about her.
Listeners wouldn't know who Nadia Comaneci is, you idiot.
I've just read about her. I've got no idea who she is.
What magazine?
it was with dust in the back of the...
The Perfect Ten. I remember running into her in Darwin.
Name
drop.
Bo Derek. Yeah. Did you run into Bo Derek or Nadia Comaneci?
Nadia Comaneci was out here for the Sydney Olympics, I remember.
She was.
Yeah, running into her down Darling Harbour.
She was seeking your view on...
IFAB.
The arabesque?
on IFAB.
Yeah, the IFAB. I don't know. Yeah. The World Gymnastics Body's got to get rid of the arabesque. It's old. It's done. And this nonsense about presenting to the judges, for Pete's sake. You're in the entertainment game.
Dismount. Any backflips?
I've got nothing against Robbie Cruz. But I just don't think he's doing enough for Australia right now.
Hashtag?
Oh, that's great. So that's Chris Beath joins the Prince Sainsbury. We need the Brenton Speed Honour Roll.
It's the Speed 11. We've got a ref.
We've got a ref.
And we've got an attacker and a defender.
Sainsbury and
three. We've got a centre half, a left back, and a left wing.
Speedy
Robbie Cruz,
11.
Jambo, and Sainsbury.
Andy Harper, thanks for your time this week. Will you be back on the ranch next week, or are you going to join us in the studio?
No, it's much better
when you're in the studio.
No, I've been on the. I'm saddle sore, Mus. I'm saddle sore. I've been on the road for
a
week.
I hope that comes from riding a horse.
It comes from being on the road for a week. I've got to get home.
All right. Thanks for your time, Speedy. Thanks for your time.
Good on you, Belford. Well done.
Thank you.
Enjoy your football this weekend. And, of course, Daniel Garb and Simon Hill will be back on Monday. A little bit of Enya to take you out. Gemma, you listening?
When is
bit of Enema.
Is Enya too?
A bit of Enema to take us out?
We'll get Enya on the podcast. See you next week.
Speedy needs
that would be a good get. That would be a good get, Enya.